The Space God Memoirs. Episode 5. In the distance, the Gannad River Valley split the otherwise dusty land, the muddy river winding its way through bumpy hills and tree clusters, verdant with the greens and purples of the local flora. In about a day we'd be there, but for now we were in the wastes, the land covered in sparse patches of stringy grass and blown over with gray dust. The wagon trail we followed was an older one, and seldom used, the wheel ruts barely visible on the hard-packed ground, and not a fellow traveler in sight. I figured this was probably a good thing, since there was less chance of Ratface and his cronies following us this way. All the same, the path would take us to the river towns, and the valley was pretty tough to miss. Partway through the day, our travels brought us through a burnt-out old settlement. 14 rusty structures lay scattered about, a few with their door hinges swinging eerily in the winds. They may have once been shipping containers. I made sure to keep my eye on everything as we made our way through this ghost town. The only residents I spotted were the skeletons, most of them in or near the open metal containers, or scattered across the dusty ground. Several hung from ropes attached to a pole in the town center, moving a little when the occasional wind blew through. None of the corpses looked recent, but a few wore tatters of their former clothes or had grime still covering the bones. These were not people killed in retribution, but within recent memory. I had never come this way before. I had not known these folks, had never seen their children playing or heard their laughter, never traded or eaten with them. But still my mind lingered, wondering what had happened to them, how they had died. Of course, I wasn't about to investigate them to find out, for all I knew was a flesh-eating disease that had done these people in. But more likely it was just one of the usual causes. Hunger or murder, perhaps a mix of the two. Maybe raiders had come down on the town, killed half the people, and let the others starve with no food remaining. Or perhaps the hunger had come first, the survivors fighting it out for the last scraps, resulting in the hanged corpses. All of that happened far too often out here in the wastes. But there was nothing I could do to help any of them, so we drove our cart through town as quick as we could. On the edge of the ghost town, embedded into the side of a flaky mound, I spotted something large and metal. As we got closer, I could see its disc shape and silvery sheen, covered with grime as it was and protruding halfway through the mound. "A ship," I said to the others, pointing at the old thing.
"Never seen many this close to the valley," said Burge.
"Yep," added Rayleigh. "Figured the evolved ones tore down all the ships this side of Gervath Nar."
I ran to take a look. The ship was one of the mid-sized ones from what I'd seen of them.
Probably could have held a crew of 4 or 6 back in the day.
Zero now, of course. The bottom had fallen out from it, a mass of frazzled wires hanging down and flopped out onto the ground. The hull was absolutely junked, too, covered in burns and more than a few fractures. Not much to scavenge here. I placed a hand on it, feeling a layer of gritty dust over the sun-warmed metal. I stood there, alone, running my hand over the shell of the ship as I took a deep breath. In moments I felt it. Faint, pulse-like sensation in the back of my head. Very faint. I closed my eyes and took another breath. 3 counts in, 3 counts out. That breathing exercise Ven said would help me discipline my mind. As I expelled the air from my lungs, there it was again. A presence. A pattern. Strange, disconnected thoughts that flowed across my mind. Thoughts that briefly reached out to me and then fell backward into the depths of unconsciousness. This happened again and again. Just a repeating signal. This clunker wasn't saying much. But those old ships were a curious thing. They weren't just broken machines. It was said that back in the day, all the legitimate spaceships flew by mental command, by connecting to the thoughts and desires of their pilots. In a way, the ships had minds of their own, thoughts of their own, or maybe machine programs made up of the same stuff as our thoughts. Sometimes people could pick up on those thoughts, connect with them.
Not everyone.
But it turns out that I could. Since I was a kid, I had gotten weird feelings from the relics. Though not until 5 years ago with the Vuldak compound did I realize I could actually talk to the things. That's why I was still here, working with the techies on their project, and not just wandering off in some random direction. This clunker barely had any life left in it. It was a shell with a fading pattern attached. But it brought to mind our own ship, the first one that had really talked to me. The same one we were working so hard to fix up. Me and the crew didn't spend much time lingering in that ghost town. The wreck had no salvageable parts, and the whole town had a real bad vibe to it. The kind of place where nasty stuff had happened and might happen again. Thus we moved on. As the sun was setting, we found ourselves about a half day away from where the road would turn north into the river valley. Our group made camp by a familiar-looking ruin, the rusted-out shell of what could have been a grain silo or a water tower, which stood atop a small rise overlooking the wagon trail. I led the beast and cart behind the old tower and placed a bedroll beside it, looking southward as I watched the sun set behind an endless vista of weathered hills and scraggly grasses, only marred by the occasional canyon that still bore the ashen signs of that long-past disaster. Soon that too vanished, as the land was blanketed in darkness, and up above, the sky was alive with countless stars, greeting my eyes as I glanced upward, leaning against the side of the rusty old tower. I peeked briefly behind me to see the darkened form of Burge sitting in the cart, Rayleigh crawling into his lap, but none of us were in much of a talking mood. I paused another instant, eyes scanning the sky, taking in the sights, the same I had seen every non-cloudy night since before I could remember. It was all so expansive, so vast, so endless. As a child, I had always marveled at the night sky, the possibility of a billion worlds, each with their own stories, their own adventures and marvelous opportunities. For a good part of my life, some of that marvel had turned to anger. All those stars, those planets, those myriad wonders, all were there to taunt me, to say, "Sure, the universe is a vast scragging place. It's great. But you suck, so you're stranded down there on Arubis. Scrag you." I fingered one of the gems again, feeling its perfectly carved faces. Now that was starting to change. Flying. To be unburdened. Weightless. Free. Off of this dusty old world. Away from its dramas and its struggles. In all the hundreds of years since Arubis' civilization had come crashing down, nobody had actually restored a shift engine and got a working spacecraft. There was always something whispered around campfires at night. They tell the old stories about how folks used to fly, not just in the air, but above it, beyond our little world. But nowadays, it was said that only the gods could fly. Their Duga-scragging followers said we had all lost the right to such abilities when the retribution hit. A punishment for society's hubris, its wickedness and pride. I knew that was a load of Rusha shit. There were pieces of the old ships all around, mysterious relics sticking out of the wasteland dunes or laying in heaps in some town's junkyard. None of them worked, just yet. But if you knew what to look for, you could find pieces that fit together. Ever since I was a kid, I dreamed about flying. Sometimes it was a regular sort of flying, arms flapping in the air, levitation or whatnot. But of all the time, those dreams had ships. Sleek new ships that zoomed across the skies or careened through the endless expanse of starry infinity. Mother Galani, back in Vandrus, told me I was probably a pilot in a prior life, before the retribution hit, and that's why I had those dreams. Later in life, I'd dismiss much of that as religious superstition. But I could link my mind with the ship, so maybe there was some truth to it all. I looked back upward, my eyes drawn to the blinking of a light. It was just the Eye of the Gods, as the Evolved Ones called it. Dominating the night sky, it was a spiny mass of metal, gleaming like polished silver. Every 33 seconds, one of its 10 points would illuminate with a red pulse. I couldn't help but look at the thing, observe it, even though in a way it made my skin crawl, as if it really was watching me, watching everyone, just like the priest said. I'd never really gone for that religious stuff. Had never been one of the faithful or the evolved, as they claimed. A bunch of Duga masters, really, with their tech-hating and their preaching. But I wondered at times if there was some truth to what they claimed.
that the people of Erubis were under a kind of quarantine, stuck on this rock of a world until they somehow bettered themselves and proved their worthiness to the gods.
I turned from the eye and shook my head, trying to force those ridiculous thoughts away.
I was no poet or philosopher to be thinking big thoughts like that. Waste of time. But as if in response, there was another flash from the eye. White this time, and brighter. I looked up again to see a series of those flashes, nearly a dozen, coming from the center of the satellite. In seconds, a cluster of glowing orbs hovered there in the sky, star-like but clearly closer than the stars.
"Whoa!"
exclaimed Burge from the cart behind me. We all sat transfixed as the sky to the left of the eye erupted with another handful of flashes, until there were around 20 of those orbs hovering up there. Just looking at them, I felt odd, queasy, like when I connected to the old ship in the lab, but different. Then the orbs began to move, rapidly twisting across the skies as they danced about one another. Distant sounds echoed down to us, zips, whistles, and electrical crackling. A louder sound rang out, a blast. One of the orbs shined brighter and exploded out, forming a smoky, donut-shaped cloud where it had been. They continued their hectic motion until the same thing happened to another orb. More and more of them were destroyed in what I figured must have been some kind of fight, though us landbound folk could hardly imagine what kind of fight, or between who. As we sat there dumbfounded, the mad cosmic dance suddenly stopped.
Only 6 of the orbs remained.
5 drifted back towards the Eye of the Gods and blinked out of sight. The 6th one began to get bigger. It reminded me of a shooting star, which seemed to rapidly grow brighter and brighter as it dashed across the sky, until I could see a vibrant orb of white-hot light passing directly overhead before growing smaller again as it disappeared beyond the northern horizon.
"What do you think that was?"
asked Rayleigh, as the thing vanished behind the northern hills. I turned around to face them. Rayleigh had stood up and was looking skyward.
"It's gotta be them,"
Bird stated, shaking his head.
"Who?"
I asked.
"Well, the gods, of course,"
answered Burge. I shrugged and rolled my eyes.
"What, Kef, you don't think so? Who else would have flown out from the Eye of the Gods other than the actual gods?"
"But if those were the gods, why were they fighting? Those things were clearly blowing each other up."
"Yeah,"
added Rayleigh.
"I've never heard anything about gods fighting."
"Oh, come on,"
Burge responded.
"You two really don't know your religion. The legends I've heard say that not all the gods get along. There's what our priests call the Lords Beyond, who are also called the Vayr, led by the great Lord Gervath. Then there's the others, the Nayar, who are said to come from beyond the stars and are forever plotting to seize what belongs to the Vayr. My grandfather used to tell me all sorts of stories about their battles."
"You really think it's like that?" I replied. "They just live up there in that thing and fly down for visits or come out to fight?"
"According to my grandfather,"
he answered,
"when he was a little kid, there was a landing. This huge, weird-looking, glowy ship came down from the sky, and some of the Lords Beyond came out."
"What did they look like?" I asked.
"Well, grandfather only saw it at a distance, but he said they were tall, beautiful, but kind of weird-looking people. Like they didn't really belong here."
"And what happened after? Did they do anything?" I asked.
"I think they went off to meet with the old queen, and also the Evolved One's leaders. I'm not too sure."
"How did anyone know they were gods?" I asked.
"I don't know,"
shot back Burge.
"Probably because they came down in glowing starships, or maybe it's just how they looked."
"Or maybe they were just some guys faking it," I responded, grinning a bit. "We're all working on restoring that old ship. Once we get it functional, you could buy some snazzy costume and pretend you're a god too."
"Kef, I don't think it was like that. I mean, maybe people just knew it. Like the gods had a kind of presence to them. That could be a thing when you meet a god. But, I don't know. It was just some old story."
Burge looked down and sighed. "Ugh, sorry buddy," I said, patting his shoulder. "I don't mean to be a jerk. Just trying to look at this reasonably before we jump to any conclusions."
"Well,"
stated Rayleigh, looking towards us,
"science teaches us to keep an open mind until we have enough evidence. And we just saw some lights in the sky, so..."
She shrugged.
It could be just about anything at this point. It was pretty Kino, to be sure, but there's not much use in speculating until we know more.
I wanted to say something clever in response, but instead I just nodded. So did Burge. It had always been hard to disagree with Rayleigh, especially when she said something that made sense. So they both sat back down in the cart as I once more leaned up against the tower. Again, we were quiet.
Still, my mind raced with possibilities. While I certainly had my doubts about the stories the religious folk talked about,
I wasn't such a fool as to dismiss it all either. And we'd seen something, gods or not. But I tried to purge most of those thoughts from my mind. I was no holy man after all. What did any gods, real or not, have to do with me?
So I tucked myself deep into my bedroll and shut my eyes.
The coldness of the night descending and the day's weariness finally catching up with me. I woke that morning with the lingering ghosts of dreams flitting just out of reach, leaving my memories with teasers and broken images. I lay there for what must have been a half hour, staring up at the graying sky. I remembered lights, colors, halls of flesh that breathed and pulsed. I recalled faces, a dozen at least, a mix of etheric beauty and impossible alien ugliness. Talking, a meeting, a council?
Instant recall came to me, another fragment distinct as day. A face staring at my own. Her eyes blazed magenta. Her skin was red like the fingla berries of the Southlands, supple and ripe, and her hair like fire and shifting shades of orange.
She radiated love, but love with an edge, love that blazed and consumed.
The red woman nodded at me and winked, an impish grin upon her lips. The image of that face burned into my mind.
For a moment, that face was all there was.
There was a flash of light and the image shifted into a blurred white. I remembered little else,
but there lingered a sense of heaviness in the air. I cleared my throat, spitting out a loogie of phlegm onto the ground, then quickly pushed off the covers of the blanket and threw it off.
I stood up and shook away the weariness of sleep. Today I knew we would reach the river towns.
There was business to get done and hardly time to dwell on dumb dreams. They always felt so big and important, those dreams, until I woke up and realized they had absolutely no relevance to life. Dreams of flying. And the stars. Beautiful people and majestic places. As a kid, I wanted to think of myself as some kind of mentalist or psychic, because I always had dreams, every night, and big flashy dreams too. But nah. None of them had ever came true, and I never had much luck predicting the weather, or casting stones, or anything like that.
Nothing like those witches up in the Binadar Citadel, who could supposedly see the future, or Ganadria's own Prince Ophiro, who was said to move rocks with his mind. I pushed the remainder of dreamy thoughts out of my head, ate a few handfuls of dried ava fruit for breakfast, chugged half a canteen of water, and began prepping for the day's journey.
Gildar nudged me with its feelers and lapped up the water I gave it greedily, seeming more eager than usual to be on its way. Rather as eager as any non-expressive Rushak could seem. A moment after I'd harnessed it up again and gotten its reins ready, a fleshy, eyeless creature was back to its steady shuffle down the path, as stoic as ever.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Space God Memoirs. Space God is written, performed, and produced by A.M. Arctos. Original musical score by Alpha Colors. Various sound effects created by Industrial Strength Records Incorporated.
Please support this podcast by following, rating, and sharing on your favorite social media site. For further info on Space God, its creator, and various other opinions, musings, and thoughts, go to www.spacegodmemoirs.com or follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. If you enjoyed the Space God Memoirs, please consider supporting us by becoming a patron. Check out the Patreon link in our description to learn more.